This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us...
Alison Oldham. Hilary Larrissey.
John Ward.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Now, we were talking about your PhD on the apostrophe, and we got to the stage of discussing the development of different uses of the rules around the apostrophe.
So throughout its early history in English, it was used for all sorts of different things and very often a whim of the writer at the time. And eventually it was corralled into a set of rules, much as we see today. And the basic rules, of course, are that its use in possessives, and I'll talk a bit about that, and also in contractions, and occasionally used to mark abbreviation in the spelling. So okay. You might spell Invercargill Ingle with an apostrophe there.
Yeah, to show it something. Yeah.
So the possessive apostrophe came a little bit later, and the earliest example I found was in 1600 in a play by Marlowe, where he uses it in the phrase hero's ears. Now, in the previous editions, it had been spelt H-E-R-O-E-S. So earlier English nouns and verbs had a lot of E-S endings and E-D endings, and a lot of the vowel sounds were lost over time. Some people say there was too long a gap between the loss of this vowel sound and the possessive apostrophe in English, but I found actually there was a bit of overlap, and in fact in this edition of Marlowe's play there were several examples of nouns that still had the ES, possessive nouns that still had ES, as well as this one example where he'd used an apostrophe. So that slowly started to take off.
Could that be taken as the apostrophe replacing the E? Is that what
you... Yes. Okay. Yes.
So it was always used
to replace a sound in a word.
So then if they meant plural heroes, it would be H-E-R-O-S, and if it was the possessive heroes, it's H-E-R-O-E-S. Was that how you put it?
The hero is a name, so it's not.
Of course.
So they put had the E, and so it marked this missing E. But over time, it came to be just seen as a possessive marker. So its use changed slightly over time.
Okay.
People had problems with it being used for a plural noun because it didn't mark the S. So if you had Thomas's something or other, you know, they would say, well, you can't, that's not a good example. Something simple like the cat's tails.
Yes.
If you put the apostrophe after the S, there's no E there, so what are you marking?
Yes.
So that was the argument. So it wasn't until the apostrophe came to be seen as a possessive marker rather than marking this missing E that it could be extended for these.
So it was a way to distinguish whether it was like the cats, whether it was a singular or plural cat that's possessing.
So that's something that changed over time. Another interesting discovery I found was that some people argue that the apostrophe marked the word his, because there are some examples where the writers have written the king his sons instead of the king's sons, and they believe the apostrophe marks the missing word his, which was really interesting, and I did spent quite a bit of time researching that, but I discovered there's very little evidence. Yeah.
Would people have said it?
Yes.
They would have said, because the king his sons.
Because the reason is that in earlier English, Middle English, they said the king is. And it was spelt all different ways, so it could be the king es, king yes, king is, and if they said his, they always left the h off. So that the kings, or king is, and the king his, sounded exactly the same. So they both sounded exactly the same. And some people mistook that to be the king his, rather than the king is. Yeah, so that's how it came about. But some people claim it was very common, but actually I found very few examples of it. And yes, the apostrophe, the E's ending was much more common. So I think I put that one to bed.
And so if you gave a seminar on this, would you find people strongly supporting other perspectives on this? Or is it something they come to blows on?
Well, I guess there might be some people who, who would argue it. But, yeah, I don't know. Possibly, but I think I had a lot of evidence. And as I found with a lot of aspects I looked at, people made statements, but they didn't have evidence proving it. And in one case, there was one author said that the apostrophe was used in English since the before 1600, when I found my earliest one, and gave references, but when I looked at those references, the original copies didn't have apostrophes. It was only later copies that did. So
what about the singular word ending in S, but possessing the next item? So,
Thomas.
Say,
yes,
Thomas,
yes, Thomas
or James. S apostrophe to signify, and S apostrophe S to signify.
Some people think one, and some people think the other. But most of the guidebooks I've looked at today say, go by how you say it. So if you say Thomas's book, put S apostrophe S. Yeah. If you say Thomas book, which most people don't, it's only some words like Jesus. We don't usually say Jesus's. So, you know, just a few words like that that we don't use in the second
either
S.
Or?
Either or is fine, but most guidebooks say do it the way you say it.
So the word possess, when it's applied to multiple units of people, like people, they a lot of people possess is by the English saying it's a multiple people. They are, or they possess, to you possess. But then when you say a plural on the possessors, what happens?
Possesses a verb, so it doesn't have a plural.
Doesn't have
No. I'm just trying to think of a similar.
So he possesses,
possess. So it's second person singular, but of course we don't use apostrophes for that anyway. So he possesses, but we don't use apostrophes. But some people do. Some people do these days.
So that would be three S's.
With an apostrophe.
Okay, so if you have a
if
noun
you cut
ending
the E
a,
out
of what's on the noun with a can you, bus, I know.
Buses. The buses, wheels.
But you probably still only have one
The buses,
plural.
Wheels, you'd say bus apostrophe S. Whereas if it's plural, it's B-U-S-E-S apostrophe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The buses,
And I talked to, so I suppose we can get into the methodology for the second half.
Okay,
so my thesis was actually two quite separate halves because they had quite different methodology. So for the second half, I did a lot of observing and taking photos, much to my husband's disgust. And also because I was marking, I kept notes of examples from students' papers and all that sort of thing. And
so you were looking at signs around town.
Yes,
did you see the Orleans Cafe? No, that was in Main Street. It was O apostrophe.
It was. That's one I haven't noticed.
They're trying to break it to lean.
Make it into
you can't see it
make
now.
It into Irish.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose it would be the Irish, wouldn't it? The
O apostrophe. Like, yes, yes, yeah. I did a series of questionnaires with the general public, and I interviewed some of those people, and I also did an online questionnaire with teachers, which had very interesting results, and interviewed a younger cohort of people and an older cohort of people, as well as teachers.
Okay.
So that was the...
And you said that with teachers it had some interesting results.
Yes. Okay, I guess the most interesting thing was that they, when they were asked what they think about people who misuse apostrophes, you know, just to get their attitudes. The interesting thing with the online survey was that because you weren't face-to-face, they felt free to say exactly what they thought, and they did. And they were very scathing and, you know, made a lot of really, some of them quite nasty comments about people who misuse apostrophes. And, you know, just uneducated, ignorant, stupid, all this kind of thing. You know.
This is illustrating the problem with social media, isn't it? That people can be very scathing
anonymous
media. Yeah.
But...
Was there a difference with older and younger teachers then?
Not really, no.
Oh, okay.
But what was really interesting was that when I asked these same teachers what they saw as the functions of the apostrophe, only 9 out of 83 could tell me even one function of the apostrophe. So we've got teachers who don't know how to use, who can't explain how to use the apostrophe. They may know how to use it, but they can't explain it.
So how can they teach it?
Yes. Yes. And, of course, it's because they weren't taught. In the 70s, grammar was thrown out of the schools and they stopped teaching grammar. And so, of course, now we have teachers who have been taught by teachers who have been taught by teachers who didn't know how to use the apostrophe.
And then you've got people saying, oh, well, what does it matter?
Exactly. Yes.
And that's old hat, and we don't need it. So
do you have examples where the misuse of an apostrophe has led to a crucial change in meaning of something?
Sometimes it can, yes. I'm just trying to think of one offhand.
In a legal document, casual
situation, something. If people often miss the apostrophe out of the word where, so it reads as were. And I can think of one. Somebody asked if they wanted to go somewhere, and she said, working. I mean, you know what it means, but it's not what it reads. It sounds like they're working. They're not anymore. But usually it's perfectly understandable. But you often have to stop and reread if you're reading something. So it's not that it's not understandable, but it does slow down the reading process.
Yeah.
It makes it harder to read.
But also you get on radio announcers, television announcers. That's an example. We're going to the beach tomorrow. When they're actually meaning we're going. The apostrophe. The words have just blended into this we're going.
Yes, and a lot of them don't understand what the contractions mean anymore.
Yes.
They just see them as a word in their own right. And so that's why we're getting the old ones putting apostrophes in words like learnt and meant between the N and T, because they think, well, don't has one. So, and one fairly recent example I found on Facebook was want. W-A-N apostrophe T.
Oh, want, not. What about want, not? What were they trying to...
No, just want.
No, they do. If they see with didn't, so you've got did not, so you an apostrophe for the... That's your old one about a missing vowel, isn't it? So we're still using it for missing vowels when you've abbreviated.
Yes.
And we use it for the possessive. And sometimes it's used instead of inverted commas. Isn't it?
Well, you sync.
But that's slightly different because you have them reversed.
It's different.
Front and back.
Yeah. Quotation, sort of.
Yeah, quotation. Yeah.
So there's a lot of. A lot of different ways it's used these days.
There is one thing about your book before, misuse. I've seen it spelled usually MISUSE.
Okay, I haven't seen that.
Have you not?
No.
Leaving out an S.
So the study was partly quantitative and partly qualitative, and there's actually been no qualitative studies done on apostrophe use at all. That side of it was quite interesting, and actually finding out from people what they thought about apostrophe use, and of course you had younger ones who felt it was didn't really matter, and older ones who felt it was quite important. But during the interviews, I also gave them some tasks to do, and I started off with a correction task where I gave them a short text with no punctuation and a few spelling mistakes and things, and they had to correct it. But I found that, I can't remember what it just wasn't working that well, so I changed it to a dictation task. And at the end of it, what I found was that the older people did worse at the correction task and did a lot better at the dictation task, and it was the opposite way round for the younger people. So it was like the younger people, they had the visuals there and they could put it in. The older people were used to thinking as they wrote their writing, and when they were doing that they actually had to think about it.
So were they confused about the interpretation when it was written without punctuation?
No, not so much that. I think they just had to think about the rules. Whereas when you're writing, you just do it automatically. You don't really think about it, but they had to think about it. And so when I talked to them about how they go about using apostrophes, how do you decide to use an apostrophe, I found that the older people, of course, talk about the rules, and it's just those little rules, and also the strategies that you learnt, like the possessive, you change it round and you say the son of the king, and that's where the apostrophe goes, kind of thing.
Yeah.
The young people just talked about how it looks. Whether it looks right or it looks silly. They go purely by how a word looks to decide whether or not they'll use apostrophe.
So did they know that your research was on apostrophes when you gave them the dictation?
No.
Throwing apostrophes all over the place.
Yes, no, they had it on a separate sheet.
So does that mean you branched out a bit into commas and semicolons?
Well, I wasn't really looking at those, though. I didn't take any note of them. Yeah. They were just to take the attention away from the from the apostrophe. Yeah.
So, what's your personal feeling that the misuse of apostrophes is a retrograde step in terms of language use and understanding, or it doesn't matter?
I think the way it's being used today, it is detrimental to fluent reading because it's just used in so many different ways that it's people who are fluent readers, you interpret things as you go, and if the apostrophe's in the wrong place or not there, you just take do a double take and have to read it again. So it does affect fluency of reading. It doesn't always affect interpretation, though, which is probably the most important thing. But the thing is, we're not going to be able to go back because, it's too late really to go back.
You mean the rules aren't clear enough, or you can't reintroduce?
You could, but it would be if you've got teachers who don't know, so you'd have to teach the teachers first.
Yes.
And
scary.
Yes, but you know, if we got rid of the apostrophe altogether, we would get used to it over time. It would take us older people a bit longer, but young people would be fine with it.
Yeah.
They can interpret some pretty difficult things in their texts, which I don't know what they're on about. But what's going to happen is that our computers are going to take over, so we won't need to know spell checks and
they'll put them in automatically and decide that we mean something that is not what we're trying to say.
Yes, they do
and
now.
And you don't realise until after you press send.
They yes. do now, but they'll get more and more you know, sophisticated and able to analyse more complex sentences.
Yes,
because I did have some examples where it had misinterpreted a word as a noun, which was actually a verb, and that kind of thing, which changed the whole sense of the sentence.
Mm.
But I've noticed, even since finishing my thesis, that there's been quite big changes with spell check, with the latest updates. And
well,
that,
sometimes
so.
You're typing one word and it changes it to another without
yes, yes.
Your whole sentence has changed.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's just wrecked it.
Yes, yes.
If it crashes, the technology could crash, and we had to go back to pen and paper.
Oh,
we're going
yes,
to be
it would
in
be
trouble.
Mm. Yes.
Yes.
People won't be able to write.
But I think, because I've noticed the latest change on my computer is that you get a lot more blue lines under the words.
Yes.
And even if you type now, if you type a contraction, it comes out with a blue line and says, this isn't really good for formal writing.
Is that the blue means something's
it's
not
just a
quite,
grammatical
the red is saying something's wrong or most probably wrong.
Yeah.
And the blue, I thought that's just a query. Is this what you want to say or something like that?
Yeah. But now it's telling you that in formal writing you don't use contractions, use the full.
Okay.
And yet that's something that's changing now, that in formal writing, you know, even in students' assignments and that contractions are quite acceptable now. So,
But it's not just on the contractions, though. I think sometimes, depending on your word processing, it might be Americans wouldn't write it this way. Are you sure you want to do it like this?
I haven't come across that one.
Like that. I mean, it doesn't say it that way, but you can see that's what they're thinking.
And some sort of complex sentences they don't analyse very well. So,
yes,
but they're getting there. They're improving all the time.
But voice recognition, though, these days, just the free automatic ones, you can virtually dictate into a computer, and your punctuation can be a problem. You know, it won't know when one sentence ends and another starts and when to capitalise and so on. But otherwise, you just say it and it's very precise.
But voice recognition depends on correct pronunciation.
Yes.
So if you say where instead of where,
no, except,
it'll write where.
Except it also learns a person's voice.
And?
So if you do it and it's done it the wrong way and you correct it, the next time you say the word that way, it would know what you mean and go by the correction.
Right.
I haven't used it. My husband uses it a bit and he finds it quite good. But
well, I had, when I was at the university, for some of the things, it's very good. If you're reading and you want notes on the reading and you can just dictate it straight into the computer, you're not having to put the book down and all that sort of thing. But so I had some of the. There was a special purchase package of voice conversion software and so on, and you know you had to train it up. Now with the computer, you've got, you know, with the word processing, there's built in dictation things, and you just talk, and it's far more precise than those things were in the past, a few years back.
Yeah.
So it's certainly getting a lot better.
Yes, so it will get to a point where the computer will.
I'll just tell us how
you.
We should be saying it. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah, just improve it. So now you've. When did you finish your PhD?
2 years ago.
Two years ago.
Yeah.
So, and how has your life changed since?
Well, it hasn't really. I'm still. I finished with marking at Massey.
Okay. You don't get phoned up by newspapers asking your expert opinion on things?
No.
Well, I wondered, given, in a way, you were the expert, how did they find supervisors and markers to look at your work?
That's a problem with any PhD.
And markers, so they need to be people who knew a lot. And you knew more than they did.
It's marked on a lot of different things, on your methodology and how you apply it, and then how you interpret the data you get and all that sort of thing. So they don't need to know more than you want.
You're proving what you say. You've got to prove what you say.
Yes, and then you have an oral examination.
I was told years ago that a PhD is sort of proof of the ability to do quality research.
Yes.
And so they're looking at that. But you used a range of methodologies, which might make it a bit harder for the examiners if they're specialists in one or the other.
Yes, but using multiple methodologies is quite common now.
Yes.
In fact, a lot of people swear by it, and I guess I've done some.
You have to explain that at the time.
You have to explain everything like that. Yes, because I had done a research project some time before where I interviewed some people and also got them to write a diary about their experiences of learning English as newcomers to New Zealand, and I found I was only had three case studies, but I found one of them just couldn't write the diary, but she gave an absolutely brilliant interview. Another one gave a good interview, but not a brilliant one, but wrote an absolutely brilliant diary where she just poured her heart into it, and it was just amazing.
Yeah.
And that made me realise that if I'd only used the diary or the interview, then I would have only got one of those people.
Really. Yes. Yeah.
So I guess it seems like you really enjoyed your study.
Yeah, most of it.
So many people are tearing their hair out and wishing they could.
Yes.
You had a good experience with your supervisors, did you?
Yes.
They were very helpful and could guide you, or you were self...
Pretty much. I was self-motivated to do it, and we met up every few weeks. Once I started writing, after I had finished a chapter, we'd get together and talk about it, and email them if I had any problems or anything. But yes, they were very useful and helpful.
In your circle, were there other people doing similar sorts of research?
No, it was probably one of the problems is that it was very different from anything else, because they don't usually offer linguistics postgrad at Massey. I was lucky.
So what made you choose the topic?
The others were doing more applied linguistics teaching, that sort of thing. So I was doing something very different. Yeah.
So yours was different from applied linguistics? I suppose the use of grammar.
Teaching. Yes. I didn't... somebody suggested it. One of my supervisors suggested the topic because I wanted a pure linguistics topic. I didn't want to do teaching.
Yeah.
And I wanted something that wasn't going to narrow down the field of linguistics too much, because I was interested in a lot of different areas.
Oh, you mean instead of using the whole alphabet, you'll just use one piece of grammar?
That seems pretty narrow.
And it was quite, well, it was, and so my supervisor suggested it, and I said exactly what everybody said to me afterwards, which was... you can write a whole thesis on an apostrophe. And it was funny because it was just driving home, which was only 10 minutes or so, and I started thinking about it, and I thought, okay, you've got historical linguistics, you've got social linguistics, you've got grammar, and a lot of different fields of linguistics. And so By the time I got home, I'd decided I was going to do it and was getting quite excited about it.
So if someone said to you the line that's often, you know, a PhD is knowing more and more about less and less, but in fact it was very broad what you had to go into to understand.
Yes, I know there's an article in the paper, but there's also one in a Hawke's Bay paper where he called me the doctor of tiny things or something. He was a little bit scathing, but not having read it.
That's it. People often jump to conclusions.
Because it went into so many different areas of language, and it was fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.